So just really quick, my name's Richard Taylor. I'm a trustee for Charity Digital. So thank you all for coming along today. We've got a really excellent session today for you about ESG, environmental, social, corporate governance, with a particular focus on climate change. So I'm certainly not going to introduce everyone, but just to quickly introduce our chair here, our moderator, Jen Lothrop, who is a digital consultant and agile coach for Feel Good, Do Good. So she's been working for charities, digital marketing and strategy for over 15 years, including working at Volunteering England, who are now NCVO and at LSE. And she's in Derbyshire, where she's a chair for the Peak District National Park Foundation, loving all things agile, digital, and happiness, it says here. So that sounds like an excellent note on which to hand over to you, Jen. Thank you so much. Oh, and of course, a huge reminder for Q&A. You can obviously just put your hand up and we can bring the mic, but also if you fire up the app, find the session and join it, then you can submit your questions there, and I'm sure Jen will take them from there as well. Jen, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard. Well, this is a nice little cozy closed session. I feel like everyone else in the building doesn't know what ESG is, which is why they're not here, because clearly they don't understand the importance. They're probably like, ESG? No, don't need that. So today we are going to be telling you more about what ESG is, how charities can benefit, and kind of what you can do. So particularly kind of digital tools you can use, and how charities can really start to embrace ESG. We've all heard of sustainability, the triple bottom line, CSR, and maybe this is kind of the next thing, ESG, environmental, social, and corporate governance. I'll leave the rest to our amazing speakers. So to introduce our speakers today, firstly, we have Laura Stanley, who is a content creator at Charity Digital. So welcome, Laura. We have Charlotte Walsh, who is from InKind Direct, the Partnerships and Impact Director. So thanks for joining us, Charlotte. Jess Wrigley, who is from Sage Foundation, who has ESG in her job title. So ESG Policies and Strategy Execution Manager. There we go. and then finally, we have Amy Moore from Mary Curie, who is the Sustainability Manager. So a brilliant panel who know a lot more about this than I do, I'm sure. So I'm going to start with you, Amy, on what is ESG and where can charities start?
Okay. Well, for me, ESG is an extension of sustainability. So if you guys are anything like Marie Curie, you might have only just recruited a sustainability manager. I've been in post for about a year and a half at Marie Curie, and it's kind of an extension of that work. So if you haven't recruited someone yet, bypass that and go for an ESG manager, and they'll give much more of a holistic view of environment and social. There's our environment and social impact obviously aligns quite closely. If you look at the UN SDGs, it's very much about protecting the environment and society. So it's thinking about how you can run your operations to make sure that you don't have a negative impact on the environment, but you have a positive impact socially. And for us at Marie Curie, there's kind of lots of ties in with that. One thing being that for our patients, we want them to be able to enjoy nature in their last few weeks and months of life. And also, something that they have voiced to us is that they are concerned about what the planet might look like after they've gone, for their loved ones, for their children and their grandchildren. So there's kind of a lot of overlap between climate change and its effect on society. So have a think about those. And the G obviously being the governance, so how your charity is run, how do you run your organisation in a responsible, transparent way, which as charities is something that we all do. We're not about profit, we're about purpose. So have a look at your, in terms of a place to start, have a look at your mission. Your mission statement is no doubt something to benefit society or the world. So, you know, that's a great starting point. You can talk about what you're already doing or what your purpose is, what you exist for.
Fab. Thank you, Amy. And I can really relate to the enjoying nature and the importance of that. And at the Peak District Foundation, where I'm a trustee, though we consider ourselves an environmental charity, it's always about people. And that's why environment and social are so closely connected. So yeah, I really like that. Charlotte, what is ESG to you, and where do you think people can start?
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a good sign on a panel, I think, when you're thinking, oh, okay, yeah, that resonates with what I'm about to say. So that's always handy. I think ESG can be a bit of a daunting term, but it's actually a really lovely kind of combination of things of this isn't something sat on the side. This is exactly as you said about planet, people, purpose. And I think for most people in our sort of sector, you're probably already, your purpose is focused on one of those things, if not both already. So starting to think about these things in a more connected way can help to centralize it for your organization. And from a practical point of view, if the changes you want to make to reduce impact on the environment and increase it for people also resonate with your purpose, you're more likely to get that buy-in from colleagues. You're more likely to, you're more likely to get buy-in from your board to find it easier to ask for budget for things that you want to do if you can connect those first two to your purpose and to how it works in terms of governing your organisation. So a particular example from InKind Direct, we work very practically getting product out to communities. That's everything from toiletries, bedding, clothing, tech devices, office supplies. And we were getting to a point where everything was going out on pallets, which not only is really hard to find carbon neutral pallets and they're really expensive to send, but for our smaller organisations, it was a barrier because they didn't have any way to receive them. So by looking at both those things together, we've been able to change how we get product out, reduce our carbon footprint, save ourselves money, and be more accessible to smaller organisations. So it's finding those things that can hit all three elements is a really good place to start off, stepping back and thinking about your own activities and just those simple changes you could make to just do what you do better.
Thank you, Charlotte. Yeah, really agree with the whole it all being connected and kind of how you can connect it across an organisation, because it's probably linking with people from all different departments. It's not just the ESG manager or sustainability manager. Like, everyone's responsible for this. So how can you make it part of your strategy and your vision and all of that? Over to you, Jess. What is ESG to you, and where?
I think Amy and Charlotte have covered a lot of it, but reflecting what you're saying about the practicality of ESG, I think having worked in the field for a while, at the beginning it was quite confusing of like what is under this umbrella of sustainability and how do we monitor and manage progress against it. So ESG kind of came about, or really started being used a lot by corporates and now increasingly charities about within the last 5-10 years. And it essentially is just like a useful framework. It's just a way which you can, under one umbrella, categorize, measure progress and report on your impact, both on society, as you explained, and also the environment. And so within that, the E is obviously environment. So that's quite a holistic view of the environment. So not just thinking about emissions, but thinking about deforestation, things like waste management, how you can have impact on natural systems beyond just the climate is the environment piece of it. Then the social piece is looking at your stakeholders, your beneficiaries, your fundraisers, your volunteers, making sure that you have a relationship with them that you really understand and that you're considering social impacts on all of those stakeholders and your employees as well. So that's things like human rights, diversity, equity, inclusion, and then governance you touched on already, Amy, about it being corporate governance. So the way you operate, which most charities are already doing really well, so business ethics, tax transparency. But it's also now starting to go beyond that. And within that corporate governance piece is how you, or whether you have the social environmental management systems in place to actually deliver on ESG, because you've probably seen in the news a lot, there's quite a lot of criticism when it comes to ESG and skepticism around a title of greenwashing. So whether or not you're actually integrating ESG into operations, you're actually treating your employees the way you deliver your purpose. And that's a really interesting shift that we're seeing, particularly at Sage at the moment. And then was it practical steps on?
Yeah, how can they start?
So it's hard because it depends. I've worked in a variety of companies. It depends on the resources that you have, the size you are, but not just the size. You could be a small organization with a really complex operations and supply chain. That, from an ESG perspective, if you take, for example, carbon emissions, can be really hard to start with. So it depends on where you're at, kind of company you are. And I think, like, practically, I would start by just understanding what my stakeholders really care about and where the organisation can have a really big impact, then from that, you'll probably come across many ESG topics. You need to start prioritising because you probably won't have the resources. Like at Sage, we don't necessarily have the resources to target everything. So think around where you can have an impact. So for example, as a tech company, Sage, we know that we can really drive digital trust within communities. We can support small businesses with ESG softwares. That's where we can really have impact. But that's not to say that we're forgetting about human rights and those kind of things. We're still delivering on those, but it's not our focus area because you really need to start prioritising in the ESG field because otherwise it can seem quite overwhelming. So I think the first step is understanding what your stakeholders really want you to do.
No, that really makes sense. And I think you talked about measuring impact, which is something that as charities we're always wanting to do because we want to measure the impact to show our funders or to show that we are actually improving beneficiaries' lives or whatever it might be. But measuring the impact of ESG on all of those things, I think we can sometimes forget. We're like, oh, we're a charity, we're doing good, but you might forget about the environmental side of it if you're not an environmental charity. So actually kind of seeing them all linked together and the impact of all those different things that you do. Yeah, it's a massive job, but really important. Great, thank you. So my second question, I'm going to come to you, Laura. How can charities benefit from ESG and why should they embrace it?
Yeah, so we launched the Climate Action Campaign because anecdotally speaking, we saw there was a big interest in ESG and people searching for it on our site. So we conducted a big survey and one of the surveys, the survey said that 71% of charities had already been impacted or expected that their work would be impacted by climate change. So we, operationally speaking, I think that addressing ESG is a really big priority. And I think charities are waking up to that now. And then from a donor perspective as well, I think it's really important. So there's research, I think it's between 70 and 80% of consumers think about sustainability when they're making their purchasing decisions. There's no reason that wouldn't transfer to the charity sector. And I think that if you're not on board with it, it's time to get there. We've already seen it. So in 2019, the Royal Shakespeare Company ended its partnership with BP because of protests against it didn't align with their values. So donors are starting to cotton on and like I think they have been for a while, but they're really starting to engage with it. They're going to look it up. They're going to find out. So I think it's a benefit from that perspective. And also that just fits in with what Jess was saying. Like I think that it's about being a responsible organisation. So if you're not doing it, and if people are looking up that information, they're going to think you're hiding something. And I think it's really important to be open and transparent about it and be upfront and address it now.
Really interesting. And I really like those stats. 71% of people, of charities think their work's going to be impacted by climate change, which is massive. And yeah, really shows the importance. And totally agree on the donor side as well. Because yeah, as consumers, whether we're donating or whether we're buying something, we want to more and more care about where it's come from, the supply chain, what else that organization's doing, which is brilliant and makes me really excited when I see that. But also, like, again, as charities, I think we can sometimes forget. Great. I am now going to come to Amy.
Same question.
How can charities benefit from ESG and why they should embrace it?
Yeah, well, I think we should embrace it because, like we've said, it's our purpose. It's what we all exist here for. So it's really actually just shouting about what we already do. And that's where we've kind of got that one-upmanship on the corporate sector because it's our bread and butter, whereas for them, it's something that they have to do additional. And then obviously, as Laura mentioned, it's you know, it will help to attract funders. It will help to attract and retain staff. Yeah, it's a natural progression from your sustainability work. It can help you to drive efficiencies and have contingency plans in place. I think someone touched on a little bit about the supply chain, and that's a really key element of it for me, although we're really not there at Marie Curie, but it's something that I want to do, is to look at, we treat our staff very well internally. So, you know, we have a lot of wellbeing resources, we pay the living wage, we're a very inclusive employer, we have a diverse workforce that represents our communities, we do a lot of upskilling and training, but we're not aware of the people in other countries that also we impact on that are producing the resources that we use. So for us, pharmaceuticals and medical equipment, we don't have that visibility of where they're coming from. And there's huge scandals around rubber glove making being involved in modern slavery, and, you know, could be linked to some of the plastic gloves and PPE that we're using in our hospices. And we don't have that oversight. So that's, for me, really something that I think we have a moral obligation to do. I don't have the answers for that. I think I'd need to go to Jess at Sage. But initially, what we've talked about, and another reason you should embrace ESG, is because it does give you a chance to collaborate with other departments in the organisation. So myself doing sustainability, linking in with HR for our people internally, but also procurement and the supply chain. And we can work together to initially survey our suppliers to ask what they're doing, what they're mitigations are, what their social impact is, and where the products are coming from, and to get that visibility. And then, as I say, work with somebody like Sage to help support that, because it's a really big, daunting task. So that's something later down the line for us. But yeah, we're trying to start small at the moment, looking at what we already do and how we treat our staff, and other quick wins like our finance, our investment policy. We've done an ESG investment policy. We tell our staff about ethical pension pots. We're looking at doing some catering guidance, so purchasing things like fair trade and sustainable palm oil, sustainable cocoa, those kind of small things before we tackle the really big elements.
Yeah, it's a big area, and it covers lots of things. But I think one of the key things is starting small with what you can do, but having a bit of a plan and starting to think about some of those bigger issues, especially like supply chain. But I really liked what you said of like, it's our bread and butter as a charity. Like, we're already ahead as charities. Like, we are here to do good things. Like, we're already doing lots of good things. So it's just kind of making sure that we're not somehow along the supply chain somewhere doing not such good things, which hopefully we're not. But I think it's when you see that kind of collective, you can kind of see it all in one place, environmental, social stuff, like how's it all linked together? You might be doing one bit of good, but making sure you're not counteracting it with something that we didn't even know was happening over here. I also really like the talk that how you talked about staff recruitment as well. The charity that I'm trustee for, Peak District Foundation, we're currently recruiting for 3 new staff. And one of our big selling points is, you know, we're in the national park, like, you know, all that kind of well-being. We have meetings, walking out and about, mm-hmm. like kind of linking that in. I think all that stuff comes under ESG. And there's probably loads that you're already doing. It's just kind of how can you be measuring that impact, because we're ahead of the corporates. So we just have to measure it better. Really interesting. I also wanted to add one more thing, myself as a benefit from, again, my charity, the Peak District Foundation. You mentioned greenwashing as a term, and you always get a bit nervous when you're taking money from corporates that it's not for that reason. But we have a really successful partner scheme with corporates. It's called Peak Partners, because we're the Peak District Foundation. And it's a lot of it is linking into the corporate's ESG and what they're trying to achieve. And they give us funding as a bronze, silver, gold, platinum Peak Partner. And we are, because we are an environmental charity, it's focused on the environmental, but the social stuff obviously comes in there too. But as a benefit, it can be a really good pull probably to get some of those corporate donors in. So you can really kind of sell how you can be helping, what's in it for the corporates as well as what's in it for you. So that's a kind of another way to look at it, I think, in terms of benefits. Great. So I'm going to come back to you, Jess. How can digital support with your ESG initiatives? So what is it that Sage are doing? And some of the things that Amy was asking kept saying kind of, Jess will know more about this. So tell us more.
So I find this really, really exciting, because I feel like within the last 5 years that technology generally has been really helping to like simplify and streamline ESG and make it easier for organizations that don't necessarily have the resources. And it's a massive interest of mine. And so, for example, one huge problem that all organisations have is, yes, we want to lower our emissions, but we don't even know what they are at the moment. Where on earth do we start? How do we figure those out? We don't have the time to do that. It's not a priority. Okay, we'll leave that one for now. Because it's hard. And what a lot of big tech companies at the moment and startups are doing are developing softwares to help you do that automatically, saving you time at very cheap costs and sometimes for free as well. So, for example, there's a lot of talk at the moment about we're in the age of digital net zero, and what that literally means is we're in an age where we can use software to help us automatically quantify our carbon emissions. So, for example, at Sage, very exciting at the moment, we've just released Sage Earth, a free trial for everyone. And what that does is it automatically pulls your accounting data, so your financial data, and without you having to do anything from that financial data, we can provide you with a carbon footprint and a dashboard that will show you, okay, across my value chain, look, I've got a lot of emissions here within my supply chain based on your spend. So that's a really, really great development. A lot of other companies are doing very similar things within that space, and it just makes your life a lot easier when you're then trying to action these initiatives. And you mentioned the supply chain. So there's a lot of companies that are working on that ESG due diligence within supply chain. So you've got companies like EcoVadis. What they do is they will automatically send out surveys, as you spoke of, to your suppliers, your customers, and it'll just help you identify any ESG red flags. So, for example, human rights red flags within your supply chain. It can help with reporting. So reporting can be an absolute nightmare in ESG. There's so many different voluntary and standards out there. It's hard to know which ones you should be reporting against, and also how you track your metrics. So a lot of startups and larger corporates as well, so like Salesforce, Microsoft, then the startups are things like Enablon, Sustain IQ is a good one as well. What they'll do is they'll help you input your ESG metrics and automatically provide you with an ESG report aligned to either GRI or SASB, which are two voluntary ESG reporting frameworks, which are very good practice to follow. And then beyond this, like if you're at the beginning and you want to think, okay, what are our ESG risks? A lot of the risk management softwares that you probably already use are adding add-ons for ESG. So Risk Connect, for example, you can add on ESG add-ons so you can identify your ESG risk register. And that's a great place to start. And you don't have to then go and pay consultants, for example, to do that for you. I say that, I used to be a consultant, so I shouldn't offend the industry. but yeah, like it's really exciting what's happening. It's moving very quickly. I think if you are looking at ways of simplifying ESG, looking into the software market is like a really great place to start on that.
Really interesting and really clever. I get excited when I hear about these new tools that can, yeah, do so much cool stuff. And sounds like a much easier place to start, because it's something as a small business owner myself, like, yeah, trying to work out what I should even be measuring is always like the hardest place to start, I find. Great. Charlotte, how about you? How do you think digital can support ESG initiatives?
Yeah, I'm sat listening to Jess and I'm thinking, oh, I need to write some of these down. I wish I brought my notebook. I guess I'd kind of taken a step back on this question. I think you're right. There's some really specific things for ESG that are focused on ESG. But it also the contrast is true as well, in that it's not a whole separate thing. If you are looking at things like the charity governance codes, several of the principles build in environmental work, build in the impact you're having socially. Are you being transparent in what you're doing? Are you reporting what you do and tracking your impact? So if you're already working on things in that area, or you're already, we've mentioned the sustainable development goals, you're already kind of thinking in this way. If you're doing any sort of work around EDI and thinking about how you can increase inclusion, this all kind of plays into the same space. So you don't need to start with a brand new vocabulary or a whole new pitch to your colleagues or the board. A lot of this stuff kind of, there's a lot of synergy between all of these different things. So having a framework that works for your organization will naturally bring all these things into play. And certainly when I reflect for In-Kind Direct, and thinking about some of the few but very big positives that came out of things like lockdown and the pandemic, we're a UK organisation, so we work with about 5,000 local organisations across the UK, and we used to spend a lot of time travelling between regions, holding very specific focus groups with a very specific group. And then during lockdown, we were able to run focus groups with people from Cornwall and Scotland and get a real diversity of views and understand much more quickly what our network needed from us and what we could go do, as well as the fact that we weren't physically travelling around and doing all of that to go find that information. So there are some real benefits from digital, and a lot of the shift that organisations had to make very, very quickly during lockdown that we can now step back on and take the good bits from is where digital can hugely support, particularly in building inclusion and what that means more broadly. And I think in terms of specific resources, I mean, I can't be as specific as the individual calculators, which, Jess, I'm in awe of. But I'm thinking, certainly, Charity Digital, Charity Comms, NCVO, Akivo, there are brilliant online resources. There are brilliant templates, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. And there's also some brilliant forums. So if you've got that question that you don't think you can kind of answer within your organization, I'm forever on those forums. Has anyone got a this? Has anyone done this? This has just cropped up. Has anyone done this before? It's a brilliant way of sharing information across at least a UK, if not broader, kind of range of heads and minds. So I think digital's got a huge role to play in just trying to make this easier for people.
Yeah, definitely. Starting somewhere with something, you're probably already doing lots that links into all three of those points. So how can working out which bits you want to focus on? Laura, you were nodding away throughout that as well. Would you like to add anything?
Vigorously. I just agree so much. Yeah, basically, as part of our research, we found a lot of these tools and they're amazing. We actually, my colleague Josie is very... like thoroughly put into a big resource doc, which you can find on the Charity Digital Climate Action Hub, not a plug. But yeah, it's so good. The amount of stuff we found, there's a net zero calculator that was created by a charity called Edinburgh Science, where it splits all the different things that go into an ESG strategy or a net zero strategy even. And it tells you how much effort you might need to put into it, whether it's in depth or where you can do that quite quickly. And I think that's quite a good idea if you're starting small and you're not sure where to start and how to find those goals. But also what I find really interesting is that digital, as well as being the solution to a lot of the problems that we have with ESG, is a little bit of part of the problem, which is another reason we started the Climate Action Campaign. Because I think emissions from digital technology is about 4% of the entire global greenhouse gas emissions. And that's comparable to the aviation industry, which everyone hates because of the climate change. So I think it's about using digital strategically and making sure that, as well as everything has to be a balance, as everyone's already said, I think that make sure, because digital, again, for the charity sector, is so helpful because it's going to make our time better used, and it makes things cheaper, which is the cost of living crisis. We all need that. But yeah, just even little things like refurbishing your technology or recycling it. There's charities where you can donate your old technology to. E-waste is a huge problem for climate change. That's just when, you know, you throw all your old laptops in landfill and it releases a lot of gas. So just thinking about how the little places where you can have impact in digital. Sending one less email a day, apparently, can have a lot of... The research has been a lot of fun.
I was going to ask, could I come in on that? So it's a really valid point, and I can't claim to know much about the emissions of websites, but I think there's a really key point there. We've been talking a little bit about inclusivity, that digital and access to devices and the skills to use them is absolutely key. And with another hat on, I'm an ambassador for the Digital Poverty Alliance, which is all about there isn't currently equitable access to tech devices and to the skills to be able to use them. So again, tackling that as an issue is also part of the ESG agenda, because digital is a huge solution. But if you're then providing a solution which everyone doesn't have access to, you're actually creating another problem. So kind of solving those two things hand in hand, and there's so much work going on in that space. And the Digital Poverty Alliance is committed to eradicating digital poverty by 2030. So it's on a really steep kind of trajectory. And the refurb piece as well, we work very much in the reducing landfill. That's where IncondirectAct's heart is. And we're just at the end of this month. I'm saying this as an absolute plug, shamelessly. If you're registering with us for free, we are launching towards the end of this month a refurb project. So for particularly small organisations, but charities registered with us, to access refurb laptops to try and kind of tackle both those sides of the equation. But that's it. I'll stop
that's
now.
Amazing.
No, really interesting, and just shows how everything's so interconnected as well. On the digital footprint, I've been reading into that a lot more as well, and I've stopped sending thank you emails because I read, like, I think an email, you said like one email a day is, it's like 0.4 grams of CO2 or that's something. Nice. And now every time someone sends me an email that just says thank you, and I'm like, girl, send me that email. I know you're thankful. So that's my tiny little thing that I've started doing on my digital footprint. I could talk about that for ages as well, but I won't. So just to quickly end before we go to questions, I'm just going to ask you each, just really in one sentence, share what's one thing that charities can do today, maybe not today because we're at the Charity Digital Conference, but soon, to embrace ESG. Amy?
I would say sit round a table with other teams in your organisation. So, yeah, HR, procurement, finance, anyone else that you think is relevant in terms of having an environmental and social impact. Talk about what you're already doing. So your mission statement, how you're having a positive impact on society, and then set some ambitions moving forwards. And yeah, always start small. So whether it's, yeah, as I said before, telling your staff about ethical pension part, or looking at your investment policy, or looking at how you treat your staff, start where you think is manageable, and then you can always evolve that plan with further aspirations.
Thank you. Jess?
I think that was a really, really good point. And I think building on what you said, Amy, I think sitting around that table with, yes, your different business units, your employees, and also bringing into that conversation your funders, your beneficiaries, your broader stakeholder group, because that will also help influence change within your organisation. So one thing that I've noticed working, this is mainly from the corporate background, but is that sometimes you really want to do some amazing stuff in ESG, but you don't have the buy-in, as you mentioned earlier, from the top. So by having those perspectives of, oh, actually, our donors really care about this, we should do something, sometimes helps influence that discussion. And really, you need the resources, the funds to be able to deliver on ESG. So you need that buy-in from the top as well. So including the other stakeholders in those conversations, I think.
Thank you. Charlotte?
Broken record, I'm going to agree. I think talking is absolutely the most important thing. But I would also say, it's like most things that you're trying to build a strategy, is do something. Don't wait till you've got the perfect strategy fully formed and done and signed off to do anything. Reduce your printing, switch to fair trade tea and coffee, encourage your staff to use public transport, avoid using lifts if you can, if you're able to. Do something, because what you'll probably find is it will start to get into people's minds, and you may even find that things like, if you switch utility provider, it saves some money, and that then gives you the leverage to have those bigger conversations. But again, I wouldn't wait for a polished strategy. I'd do something now.
Nice. I like that. Laura?
I completely agree. So yeah, I would say start small, think about the areas where you can have an impact quickly, maybe split out the ones that are goals for the future and ones that are goals for now. And I think in relation to what everyone said, if you start small and start with something, I also think it sort of builds hope around the whole thing, because I think the goals can just seem so overwhelming and you get climate dread and it's terrifying. But actually, if you start small, people get energized by it. We've seen it in our content team, to be honest, where we're all extremely pro-environmental action now. I've become vegetarian. It's like the little small things that can help. And I just think it's, I think it's start small, see where your impact is now, and act with hope, not fatalism. Funny.
I like that. I think that's a perfect place to end. I don't need to wrap that up. I'm going to end on that and go to questions. So thank you, Laura. I have one question on here, but does anyone in the room have a question?
Thank you for that. I wanted to ask you, as a panel, who you think is your biggest ally in terms of delivering ESG at a charity, given a role. And it's slightly... just as an explanation, a slightly loaded question, because I've been trying to convince other... I'm a chief information officer. I've been trying to convince that community that CIOs should be a leader, maybe not just like appoint a sustainability manager, no disrespect, Amy, to lead the agenda. But who would you consider as your greatest ally to deliver ESG outcomes?
Yeah, I don't mind going. I always welcome a loaded question. And I don't think there is any one answer. I think it would depend so much on your organisation, the type of work you do, who would already be your allies on any other issue in an organisation. I certainly think, like a lot of other key aspects, I'm thinking about EDI or data protection, having a trustee champion can be incredibly helpful, because they will keep asking those nudging questions at every trustee meeting when it doesn't quite make it onto the agenda. They'll be the person who goes, oh, have we thought about, are we doing this? But I think more broadly, it's whoever would be your allies more generally. So I know certainly for a lot of organisations I've worked with and where I'm working now, we've talked about that link between people and environment. And sometimes people find it much easier to argue with environment and something that feels quite abstract and, oh yeah, but other people are doing that. It's much harder to argue with the people stuff, particularly when social in this context means your staff, your volunteers, the people you're working with. So we, in KindDirect, we have a wellbeing and togetherness working group, which is four of our staff. Speaking to them about it and having it come from that perspective, not only from the ground up, but also very much from a well-being point of view, I would say is probably much harder to argue with as a starting point. But that's probably quite a rambly answer that gives you a few options, hopefully.
I agree with that. I think it depends on your organisation. Like ESG within Sage, it's become a change management process, right? So one of the first things you do is you map out who are your allies and who are people that needs influencing and convincing that this is a good thing to do. And back when I was a consultant, I probably advised, you know, you want to buy in from the CEO, but that's not realistic in most organisations. What you need to understand is, okay, great. Well, as you said, I think the trustee level is fantastic. We've just appointed someone on our board who's responsible for ESG. We hadn't had that year ago, so it was our chief people officer who was our main ally in making sure we embed ESG and also embedding it into like people's objectives and that kind of stuff really helps, because as you mentioned, like you can't just have an ESG manager, a sustainability manager in a company and for it to integrate, like that's not realistic. The purpose of the ESG team or sustainability team is to make sure, which I'm sure you come across with being chief information officer, did you say? Yeah, with cyber and those kind of things, it's the same kind of process and data, like you need to integrate it. You can't have one person delivering it. And so I think it is about mapping the people that can support you really with that and then getting that message across and influencing. And part of that is education, right? So we've had to do a lot of board engagement and education and training on ESG to make sure that they understand from an environmental, particularly as you mentioned, perspective. How we did it at Sage is we were like, okay, well, you know, net zero decarbonisation is a big thing. It seems quite far away, but immediately now we're seeing climate risks. Our office in Newcastle got shut down because of extreme weather at Christmas time. That's a climate risk that's impacted us. We rely on data centres. A lot of our data centres are in huge areas of water scarcity and water risks. If they go down, Sage goes down. So communicating, as we talked about, the benefits, but also the risks of climate on you or different things on you as an organisation is a good place to start as well, I think, with that.
Amy, did you, as the sustainability manager, who's your biggest ally?
Well, I actually immediately thought externally, and I thought of the NHS. So they're always a bit ahead of us and we look to them and follow in their footsteps, really. So helpfully for us, we have contracts with them and there's compliance in there that says we have to do stuff. So yeah, I probably haven't had too much of a difficult conversation.
Great, thank you. Okay, I've got a couple of questions on here. First one from Holly Collins. The SD goals, sustainable development goals, have been mentioned a couple of times. Do you have an opinion on how these can be best used to measure impact?
I don't suppose we've used them yet to measure impact. We've kind of just referred to them in terms of in a supportive way. So we are in support of the SDGs and we try to follow that model and we look at where what we're doing supports those, be it with our stakeholders or globally. But we're not really at the monitoring stage. So maybe that's also why I can't answer that question. Not something that we've done, I'm afraid.
No problem. Anyone?
Similar to yeah. Amy, we're not at the point of formally measuring against them, but we've identified which ones we would align with. And I think my kind of, when I was first looking at these a few years ago, was you've got that very top level sentence. There is so much information behind each of those SDGs as to what they mean and what they're measuring and what the kind of end result they're aiming for is. Actually, even just reading the detail can give you a sense of where your organisation can most readily align, which would then give you your metrics you wanted to measure against. So I would Yeah, so we're not at the point of monitoring against the SDG, but we've incorporated those aligned metrics into what we might be measuring. So we've kind of done it the other way around.
Thank you. Okay, I have a good question here from Dan Such. With hybrid and home-based working, does the panel have any thoughts about how to support remote staff who are buying their own tea, coffee, fuel, light bulbs, etc., and any recommendations or tips to support them? I might come to you again, Charlotte, as you talked about the little things like tea and...
I say in terms of, support, I think there it will build into broader policies that I think most charities have had to develop if they didn't have them already of what the organisation supports for hybrid or remote working and what is on the employee. So, for example, at InKind Direct, we have a London office and a Midlands office. We encourage and are supportive of our teams not having to physically be on site 5 days a week. But we absolutely provide a site for them 5 days a week. If there is any kind of financial heating, Wi-Fi concern, we provide a safe place for them to be that we would fully staff. We would fully sort of supply. I think in terms of encouraging, we would identify why it's important. So I don't think we would be paying for our staff to go and buy fair trade tea and coffee to put in their kitchens. No. But we would have those conversations about why it's important. And again, stepping back, being a living wage employer, giving people the ability to have the flexibility to make the choices they want to make, I think is really important. So I would say it's more about encouraging flexibility, celebrating small things people can do, and bluntly making sure people have got the ability to make the choices they want to do and have the money to do that, rather than it necessarily being our responsibility to make sure it's fair trade tea in their kitchen. That answers the question.
No, I think it does. Really good point. And I think it shows the importance of that message being across the organisation and the buy-in from all the staff, so that they do naturally want to make some of those decisions at home. We don't want to be telling people what kind of tea they have to buy, because I do still buy Yorkshire tea. but helping them make those better decisions and how everything that they do in their life links to ESG. And I think we could have a whole nother conversation of how staff's lives link into the organisations on a wider level and measuring ESG as individuals as well. However, we are 2 minutes over time. So I would like to say a big thank you to our panel. I found it really, really interesting myself and learnt loads. So thank you very much.